Well, it is just after 10 p.m. on May 8, 2011. It is Mother's Day, 2011. So happy Mother's Day to any mothers listening out there who happen to hear this in the next 2 hours, West Coast time. Anyway, I'm just driving home right now. Actually, I was over at a friend of my sister's who actually is out of town, and my girlfriend is house-sitting for them / watching their children. And I'm not sure what the proper way of saying that. You're not really babysitting them for 3 days. You're not really just house-sitting. But anyway, keeping an eye on everything for the husband and wife who left. And just heading home right now. I got to go to work in the morning, so better get a head start and avoid all the traffic, because I'm trying to drive right through traffic this time tomorrow. So, well, not this time tomorrow, but I mean heading this direction tomorrow. Obviously, I'm not going to work at 10 p.m. or it wouldn't even be an issue. But anyway, thinking a little bit more about technology, I'd mentioned technology in a couple of segments maybe a month or so back. And I actually want to get into, I will get into the negative aspects of technology in another time, because obviously there are some negatives, and I like to highlight the positives of these. But one thing that really kind of surprises me still to this day is people forget how technology really changes their lives. And one thing that's really amazing when you think about it is that the poorest people in America today, and even some, you know, poor people in third world nations, they wouldn't go that far, but especially in America, the poorest people in America living today still have it better than the richest people did, you know, even 100 years ago, or even, you know, especially 1,000 or more years ago. I was watching a thing on the History Channel. Actually, I wasn't able to watch the whole thing, and unfortunately we had to switch out our DVR because it was acting up, so I lost all the recordings. But there's a show on the History Channel called Roman Vice, and in the very beginning they talked about, it wasn't even up to Caesar yet, I think they were talking about Augustus, but anyway, they were talking about how when the emperor came over, they would actually have crystal glassware as part of, you know, to show how rich the person was who was hosting the party for the emperor, and it was kind of amazing to me because, you know, obviously crystal glassware nowadays you can get pretty cheaply, considering back then it was, you know, probably a couple years' salary for many of the, you know, peasants working back then, or maybe 10 years out. I don't even know exactly how much it was. It's definitely expensive. And they talked about one part of the show. They talked about how a slave basically working for the rich guy dropped one of them, and, you know, I don't know how they get these stories. I don't know if it's completely made up, but they act like it's based on some sort of, you know, true recollection, but I don't know. I mean, anyway, maybe they read it in the hieroglyphic. Just kidding. But anyway, the point is they talk about how one of the peasants dropped the crystal glassware, and of course at that point they would feed him to the manta-ray eels, which are man-eating eels. And, of course, nowadays, if you drop someone's glassware, you know, it's no big deal. Back then, of course, only the richest people could afford it, and it would cost you your life if you broke it. But even just looking back 100 years, when you think about the way technology has advanced, we live today, even the poorest people in our country, in America, the poorest people still have television sets if they want one. They still have automobiles they can drive in. They can still fly across the country if they save up their money. It really doesn't take a whole lot of money when you think about it to fly across the world, and, you know, you can spend a few nights in another country and come back. And that's something that, for instance, John Rockefeller could not do. He could not make a telephone call. I got to be careful of my wording exactly, because I'm not sure exactly when John D. Rockefeller, you know, exact dates as far as when the telephone was invented and longest and all those things. So I'm not going to get too picky on that, but as far as travel is concerned, of course, we can travel much further distances than he could. We have television sets that he never had, you know, ways of communicating that he could never even imagine. And, of course, cell phones, where not only did they, you know, if he had to make a phone call, he'd have to go somewhere and call someplace, hope somebody was there, but, you know, nowadays, Most of us have cell phones. You call pretty much anybody who has a cell phone, and you can be in constant contact with people. But it's through technology that allows us to do these sorts of things. It's only technology that allows us to contact people from across the world, or to go visit people from across the world, to be able to see things that, you know, our television sets now can produce images of outer space and of the sea and of things that you know, even places you've never been before. You know, we don't actually fly to Switzerland to go see. You can at least watch it on TV. Something they could never even imagine back when John D. Rockefeller was the richest man in the world. Doesn't matter how much money he had, he could not watch people skiing on the Alps on television. It's just impossible. Yeah, we can do it for free now. I mean, really, you can find a TV free on Craigslist, plug it into the wall, and find the programming for free, or you can, you know, walk over to the library, go on the internet there, pull up a YouTube video, and you can watch people skiing in the Alps. You can watch, you know, all sorts of video from across the world for free. Something that, you know, Rockefeller could have used his entire estate and not paid, you know, and could not have bought these sorts of things. And it amazes me, too. They were, you know, I remember watching one of these TED Talks where they talked about the Human Genome Project that started, I believe, in 1993. Took them 10 years, and they spent something, you know, tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars getting this thing completed. And they said by the time they finished it 10 years later, if they'd started over, they could have done the exact same thing in 2 years with, you know, the technology, the computers, and all that we have now. Could have done it in 2 years and only cost, you know, $10 million or some fraction. And he said, and if we did it today, we could do it in 2 months and it would take us, you know, $500,000 or whatever it was. So you'll see this with the technology that we have, you have the ability to do things that you could never do before. I mean, it's things that you could not even fathom. If you thought about 50 years ago, mapping out the human genes, people would have looked at you like you're crazy, because I don't even know when genes were officially, you know, recognized. But even if people did know about the gene, when you first found out about it, to say, hey, I'm going to find out what each one of these genes does, how it's created, and everything about it, they'd be like, oh, good luck with that, man. Now, you know, for a few $100,000, anybody could have that own, you know, their own human genome created, and they could map out the human gene. I mean, it's just amazing when you think about it. It blows your mind. And so for us to be able to project outward and think what's going to happen in 10 years or, you know, even 5 years or 20 years, it gives me hope, because, of course, there's a lot of negativity going around with the economy and what's going to happen. And, you know, I mean, there's any number of things that could happen. And, of course, things could get horrible, and I really hope they don't. And my whole idea, my whole thought behind the whole process is, look, if you expect the worst, if you plan for the worst, then the worst won't be that bad. And if it never comes, then you're just ready. I mean, you know, when you think about, you know, those quote-unquote crazy people who are, you know, expecting the end of the world, they have a bomb shelter, they have food stored, they have, you know, guns and ammunition, they have all those sorts of things. You think, man, these guys are crazy. But at the same time, if nothing ever happens, if they never, you know, if the world doesn't come apart, well, these guys still have a stockpile of food and weapons. I mean, these things are still things that you can use. It's not like, you know, you have to throw that stuff away. It's not like it's all useless now. No, it's still perfectly useful. It's just you're prepared for a rainy day. And the same people, of course, if they lost their job, they wouldn't have to worry so much because they have food stored. Whereas people that don't store food, they lose their job, they're SOL, you know, to put it nicely. So the point is, though, with technology, you have the ability to really look ahead and, you know, things that you can't even imagine happening. You can look forward and you can see, like I said, I mean, you can't really imagine it, but at least in the vague sense that you can hope for things, you can have good positivity, thinking that, you know, things are not going to necessarily go to hell in a handbasket, because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You don't know what's going to happen in, you know, 5 or 10 years from now. You don't know what technology is going to be like, and you don't know how things are going to change. You can't really expect, you know, you can't really expect the worst things necessarily to happen, because things will change. Another great example is I remember reading a book about New York City, where before the automobile was invented, they had scientists, you know, analyzing how much, because of course it was just a bunch of horses everywhere, you know, more strong carriages hauling people around. In fact, it's that we're analyzing and saying, man, at the rate we're going right now, you know, we're just going to be knee-deep in horse poop here, you know, within the next 10 years. So you really had, just like we have global warming today, people freaking out about the end of the world. You had people freaking out about the end of the world in New York City because they really thought that, as it is now, you know, we're going to literally have streets just full of horse poop. And so, of course, they freaked out about all that stuff. And sure enough, it never came to be because the automobile was invented. And it made the whole worry about horses completely irrelevant. You no longer have to worry about horse poop. Once an automobile is invented, it's no longer a problem. And you can say the same thing about food, you know? People worried about not being able to feed people, that people were going to starve to death. Because it'd be, you know, we'd be overrun with human beings in this world. Well, sure enough, we find technology that allows us to mass produce food, and, you know, we can argue all day long about whether it's healthy or what it's doing to us, but the bottom line is we can mass produce food and people can survive now much longer than they did before, because if we hadn't had those advancements, then people would be dying. So the point really is just there's no telling what's going to happen in our future. So a lot of these worries that we have with global warming, with, you know, terrorism, that's a tricky one. You know, I don't know how technology is going to solve that, but global warming, terrorism, financial issues, all these things can, nothing, they can be fixed as far as I know the answer, or there necessarily is an answer, but just like with the horse-drawn carriages, you know, we never know if somebody's going to invent that automobile, and all our worries about horse-drawn carriages are gone. You know, what if we create a technology that, something like fusion power, that allows us to, instead of splitting the atom, we're allowed to combine atoms, and when you fuse them together, actually creates energy, and the byproduct is water. So, of course, you don't have to worry about, you know, carbon dioxide at that point. You don't have to worry about carbon dioxide getting into the air and all the negative effects of that. So, here's a very good example where the fusion power plant, and I'm hoping someday it will be invented. According to the game SimCity, I think it was in 2040. Because when you're playing that game, that's when you can first start using fusion power. But that's an example where if you get that power, or if you even use water, for instance, to create power, there's a lot of different technologies that are trying to extract energy out of what used to be before a crazy idea, you know. We have now where you can put basically a windmill underground, and it will capture the waves, so when the waves come through, it'll actually create energy that way. There's also ones that look like these big giant balloons that lay on top of the water, where the waves go, you know, make it go up and down, and it creates energy as well. So there's a bunch of crazy ideas of, you know, especially what would have been considered crazy, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. These are creating power now. You know, these are actually working. And like I said, when you get something like fusion, something that's going to be so amazing that it can actually create energy, and you can literally put it in the middle of the desert, and you can use that to, you know, to do everything. Once you get energy as cheap as basically water is now, the sky will be the limit on what we can produce, what we can do. We'll transform everything into electric cars, electric everything, and, you know, we can get off the fossil fuels that way. But, you know, of course, it's just going to take this major change. It's going to come, and it's going to come maybe in the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years. But when that happens, it's going to completely wipe out all the other worries that we have. It's going to wipe out so many worries that, you know, we're going to have to come up with a whole new set of worries. But at least we can have that solution, that technology always will advance. Technology will always exponentially get better. And when that happens, it's going to make a better life for everybody. Technology is what makes life better. You know, when you think about people that are dirt poor farmers, what gets them out of there is technology. It's tractors. It's, you know, machines. It's those sorts of things. You know, when you think about factories, it's not that people have to make their own widgets now. It's that a machine makes the widget and somebody just makes sure it was done right. Quality control, you have to hire somebody for quality control. You hire somebody to make sure the machines are working. That's it. And the machines can churn out millions and billions times more than the human beings could. So it's technology that's our answer. And it's technology that's going to come, but in the meantime, you know, it's difficult because you don't want to just sit on your thumbs and say, okay, well, I don't have to worry about global warming because technology will fix it, there definitely has to be some change. I mean, of course, horse drawn carriage problem didn't solve itself. The food shortage problem didn't solve itself. Ingenious people who have these ideas, and yes, made millions and billions of dollars on it. They deserve it. You know, the person who invented the automobile, they deserve to make a lot of money. The person who invented the, you know, factory machines and the farming equipment, they deserve a lot of money because they have transformed our lives to where I can go to work for 8 hours a day. I can come home, and if I want, I can just sit and watch TV all day. If that's what I want to do, I don't have to farm my own food. I don't have to build my own house. I can just work at a job and come home and sit. I mean, that's a luxury. That is being rich, you know? I mean, you're the richest people in the world if you can go to a job, come home, and you don't have to worry about how you're going to feed your children. Yeah, some people, you might argue, okay, I work, but then I still can't afford to pay the bills. Well, that's a whole different issue, you know? But the ability to actually go work somewhere, come home, you don't have to work in the fields all day long, you know what I mean? You know, spending all day long working, and then, you know, you can barely survive after that. It's like, no, you're going out to an office, you're going out to a factory if you need to, you're going out somewhere else, you're working. Some of us, of course, still have to get our hands dirty, but those of us who don't, you know, we can consider ourselves very rich because we don't have to struggle, you know, we don't have to work so hard as we did before, and it's only through technology. Technology is what gets things better, and yes, like I said, I'll mention again what technology makes things worse as well, but it's through technology that allows our life to get better. That's what we need to focus on, and that's what we need to embrace in order to survive the next coming 20, 30, 40, 50, 100,000 years, whatever.